The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Carla Howell. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Carla Howell.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Carla Howell, political director for the Libertarian Party in Washington, D.C. On Libertarians Working for You, we feature candidates running for office who will explain what they'll do to make your life better and to keep America prosperous, safe, and at peace. Today we're talking about the war on drugs. You've heard this proverb: if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you've always gotten. This describes America's century-old, abysmally failed war on drugs. We'll have two libertarian candidates join us today who are running for office this year and who aim to bring the failed war on marijuana and all drugs to a quick end. On the second half of the show, you'll hear from Tressa McElhaney, libertarian running for governor in Kansas, about what she plans to do to end today's deadly drug prohibition. But first, we'll talk with Arvin Vohra, the libertarian candidate for Congress running in Maryland's 4th District. Arvin Vohra is an educator, an author, and an outstanding Libertarian Party activist. He's an at-large member of the Libertarian National Committee and heads the volunteer team that creates content for the party's Facebook page. He runs a private tutoring business and has authored two books on education, including The Equation for Excellence: How to Make Your Child Excel at Math. Arvin Vohra is passionate about downsizing many areas of big government, including the drug prohibition. Arvin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Carla.
What inspired you to run for Congress?
I wanted to be in a position where I could make big, bold cuts to government. The cuts that really drive my campaign right now are my desire to sponsor legislation to end the war on drugs completely, to roll back current federal spending back to the levels of 1998, which would allow us to completely get rid of the federal income tax entirely.
All right. Well, that's something we don't hear every day, that's for sure. All right. So let's first take a look at the state of affairs with regard to the drug prohibition in the United States. Can you give us some background on what has been the effect of this war on drugs? What has it accomplished?
The war on drugs has been an almost immeasurable social tragedy. I mean, we have the highest prison incarceration rates in the entire world for a supposedly free country. We have a humongous percentage of that is for entirely victimless crimes, mostly drug-related crimes. In addition, the war on drugs has really been used in ways that really single out minorities, and it's really destroyed many minority communities because it's not being really, even though it's a ridiculous policy, that ridiculous policy is itself being applied in just a completely like unfair and completely biased way. So the problems are addiction, just a creation of a mass criminal state, an extremely expensive undertaking. We're talking about, you know, depending on who you ask, between $60 and $80 billion a year being spent on this completely failed thing. So it's a waste of money. It's been a violation of human rights in every possible sense of the word, and it's really absolutely time that we end it.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people listening to the show agree with that, or at least know that there's reason in what you're saying. Now, let's look at what the opposition claims. They point out what you could say is true about drugs, that they that taking drugs can have very negative consequences: addiction, overdose, physical or mental deterioration for the people who use them. Will legalizing drugs make these problems worse?
No, I believe that actually many of those problems are being caused directly by the fact that the entire drug trade has been pushed underground and made illegal. If you want to talk about overdose, the simple fact that because there's no standards, there's no commercial standards of any kind. I mean, normally, a company might try to compete by making sure that people know that, for example, that their products don't have any GMOs in them. And in the drug trade, there is no information given. So the chance of there being a massively different amount of a particular drug in sort of a highly cut and balanced out substance, I mean, that's something that's a direct cause, that's been directly caused by the war on drugs. The other thing that the war on drugs does is, because, again, it forces things underground, it creates a push towards harder and harder drugs. The simple reason for that is a given amount of heroin is going to have a much bigger effect than the same amount of marijuana. So the incentive becomes to try to push, because of the transportation costs across borders and trying to smuggle, et cetera, the incentive becomes to try to use whatever's like the most small and efficient substance. I was going to say that legalizing will actually decrease those specific pressures. And by bringing this in kind of into the open light of normal commerce and private industry, we'll end up with a situation where some of these underground problems that are caused by the underground nature of the whole thing will go away.
Okay, now, did we learn this lesson already through the alcohol prohibition almost 100 years ago?
Absolutely. And the alcohol prohibition essentially created the modern mafias, and, you know, whose legacy continues to exist today.
And so today's Crips and Bloods are basically analogous to the Al Capone organized crime of the 1920s?
Yeah, absolutely. The gang violence we see today, both in America and in our neighboring nations, is 100% being caused by the drug trade. I mean, without the drug trade, there would be no source of revenue for those organizations, and that is their source of revenue, and that is their reason for existence.
Is there any reason to keep the war on drugs or the war on marijuana?
If you look at who sponsors the organizations that want to keep the war on drugs, many of them are organizations that directly benefit from the huge tax expenditures. Prison guard unions, police unions, organizations that have everything to gain from maintaining the war on drugs. But for anybody else, there's nothing good about it. It increases crime. It decreases personal responsibility. It increases dependence on the state, and it's extremely expensive. By ending it, I mean, we could basically reduce taxes right away by, you know, $60 to $80 billion a year.
So is it fair to say that clinging on to this failed war on drugs, this failed prohibition, is being driven by special interests?
I think that it's very fair to say that. I think that is absolutely the case. I mean, a lot of big government is run by special interest, and the war on drugs is a perfect example of that.
And would it be fair to say that parents are should rest assured that their kids are less likely to get involved in dangerous drugs if we end the drug prohibition?
You know, as you know, I work in education. I work with a lot of students, and it's an astounding number of students that have really explained to me just how much easier it is for them to get marijuana than it is for them to get alcohol. I mean, simply put, drug dealers don't ask for your ID, and liquor stores do. So it in terms of keeping the drugs out of the hands of children, absolutely the best way we can do that is end the war on drugs and completely get that thing out of our way so that we can actually have a normal and reasonable approach to this problem.
Okay. So tell me, in your district in Maryland, the 4th House district where you're running for Congress, mm-hmm. do you know who your Democratic and Republican opponents are likely to be and where they stand on the war on drugs?
Sure. The Democratic incumbent is Donna Edwards, and it currently appears that the most likely top Republican contender is George McDermott. Donna Edwards has, on occasion, seems somewhat keen to favor some kind of decriminalization, but I mean, I'm not even sure where that begins or ends. When it comes to completely ending the war on drugs, which is the correct thing to do, she has definitely not supported that. What my proposal will do is it'll dramatically increase safety, dramatically reduce crime, save a huge amount of taxpayer money, and nothing that she's sponsoring is anywhere in the ballpark of that.
Okay. And how about the Republican? Do you have any sense of where he's going to stand on this?
I actually don't have 100% sense of where he stands on this yet. My guess would be that he's probably not going to be in favor of completely ending the war on drugs, and which is, to me, the only correct solution to this problem. This is not something where what the federal government should be doing is just, you know, sort of doing things in a way where we're maintaining the status quo. We should be saving money. We should be saving lives. We should be improving people's health. We should be building real personal responsibility. And that happens when you end the war on drugs.
Okay. So what do you specifically propose to do if you are elected to Congress?
If I'm elected to Congress, as soon as I'm elected, as soon as is reasonably possible, certainly within the first term, without any question whatsoever, I'm going to sponsor legislation that's going to do the following. It's going to completely end the war on drugs. It's going to release all people from prison whose only crime was drug use. It's going to get rid of the entire DEA. And most importantly, it's going to cut taxes accordingly. The immediate results of this are going to be less crime, going to be real personal responsibility, and it's going to be a tremendous savings of tax dollars, of individual dollars, which can then be used for the real productive private sector economy.
Well, you know, I think it's fair to say that neither the Democrat or Republican are going to touch a proposal like this, though we see them weakening and we see some of them getting on board with the decrim of marijuana or medical marijuana. They're always playing it safe, and they certainly don't want to go out on a limb and do something that could in any way not really even endanger their votes so much as endanger their relationship with the special interests, which would include who in a nutshell?
Basically, anybody who's benefiting from the war on drugs. In fact, I was actually just about to make the point that you made. It's the voters want to end the war on drugs. Every voter who's really considered this topic, whose goals are to improve safety, improve health, improve responsibility, and to cut taxes, every voter wants to do that. However, it's the special interests that threaten it. And so even though the votes are certainly there from voters, they're not there from the special interests. And the specific special interests are those who benefit. Prison guard unions, police unions, and those who are basically would-be potential competitors. The alcohol industry also supports the war on drugs, which is an amazing irony given that alcohol, you know, kills something like 100,000 people a year through various ways, and marijuana has thus far killed zero people ever.
Now, would the pharmaceuticals be part of that list of special interests with a vested interest? I mean, with respect to competing with marijuana as a medical treatment.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's no question that because, if you look at what medical marijuana is able to do, because it allows already existing painkillers to be more effective, it can be used instead of the painkillers from the pharmaceutical companies at a much lower cost. It's threatening the bottom line of the pharmaceutical giants. And so they have a vested interest in opposing an end to the drug war. Again, while they do donate a lot to campaigns, they're not the majority of people. And what the people want is they want to see an end to the drug war.
All right. Well, we're talking with Arvin Vohra, the Libertarian candidate for U.S. House in Maryland's 4th District. He aims to end the war on drugs. His website is votevohra.com. Vohra is spelled V-O-H-R-A. That's votevohra.com. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. And please consider joining the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. You can choose to get active, meet great libertarians in your area, and learn ways that you can get involved. Help us end the failed war on drugs, the failed war on marijuana, and help us downsize big government. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Save on your prescriptions with the RX Savings Plus Drug Discount Card offered by Voice America. It is not insurance, and discounts are only available from participating pharmacies. But 9 out of 10 pharmacies participate nationwide. Start saving today. Print your free card online at voiceamerica.rxsavingsplus.com or text the word TALK RADIO to 96362.
Want to know what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network host? How about what's new with our network? Make sure you check out the iRadio blog, a look at what's hot at Voice America and beyond. Visit www.iradioblog.com today. Get the inside scoop on every channel on our network, including breaking news, featured guests, blog posts from our hosts, and much more. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter for even more inside action. Visit iradioblog.com today and stay connected.
Now you can take your favorite Voice America radio program with you anywhere. Sign up for our mobile app if you have an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. The Voice America Interactive Radio Player, powered by Aircast, gives you the freedom to listen to any of our programs anywhere, live, and on demand. No registration is required. Listen to your favorite Voice America hosts and discover new ones. Download the Voice America mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry, powered by Aircast. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/World Talk Radio. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking with Arvind Vohra, the Libertarian candidate for U.S. House in Maryland's 4th District. His website is votevohra.com. So, Arvind, let's look again at the special interests that are driving this issue and keeping it stuck. You know, times have changed from 10, 15 years ago. It could be 10, 15 years ago, for someone to talk the way you're talking would be just so unusual. And would really cause a reaction in a lot of people. You know, a lot of people would disagree. I'm sure, and there's still some people out there who will really react to the things that you're saying and defend the war on drugs. But times have changed a lot, and I think people are not nearly as inclined to defend the war. I think people generally know that it has failed. What's your take on that?
I think it's really important for us to distinguish being my opposition to the war on drugs and a belief that drugs are good. I don't think drugs are good. I think that the best way to end drug abuse is to end the drug war. And I think that people agree with me. Even when state houses fail to act, even when Congress fails to act, the individuals in America feel so passionately that this is an insane approach to, you know, personal health, that we see in state after state, we're seeing voter referendums basically legalizing recreational marijuana or decriminalizing marijuana, referendums to legalize medical marijuana. These are all things happening at the very base level. They're not driven by special interests. In fact, they're opposed special interests. So the tide has turned. I mean, most people at this point support a complete end to the drug war.
Well, that's interesting. I definitely have perceived that's true of marijuana. I don't know, haven't heard data on that with the war on drugs, but I trust your assessment of that. I just haven't looked into it. So that's really interesting, because that would be a big shift, a very big shift in this country.
Absolutely.
And a welcome one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the people that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to people of all ages across the board, you know, I've spoken to people who hate drugs with an almost endless passion. You know, actually, my dad's one of them. And he, on his own, just brought up the other day, he's like, you know, this war on drugs is just a, just stupid. It's a waste of money. And, you know, when hearing my dad say this to me really let me know that the tide has completely turned at this point. The support for the war on drugs is at this point minimal. And it's really primarily being funded by those who directly benefit from it. The individuals in this country have really just had it with that kind of like nanny state behavior.
Yes, I think so. And I think just these ballot initiatives that you mentioned have been so successful. We now see in New Hampshire and the House of Representatives, the first time ever, just in the last month or two, a legislature actually passed a bill to, I believe it was either to decriminalize or completely legalize marijuana, first ever. Here in Washington, D.C., just a couple weeks ago, a vote was taken to decriminalize marijuana. It still needs a second vote in the city council, and then the mayor needs to sign it into law, which from what I hear is expected to, we expect this to actually happen, and we will see decrim in Washington, D.C., which means that'll be very interesting because here we are in the belly of the beast. And congressmen tend to notice things in D.C. perhaps a little bit more than in Detroit or Seattle or Denver.
They can't ignore it as easily. I mean, you know, Obama's really made a show of kind of, you know, turning the other way or just not really making it a big deal or saying he's not going to, although, you know, under the Obama administration, there's been actually an increase in raids on state-licensed medical marijuana dispensaries. But when it's in D.C., he's going to have to make some kind of action, and that's the heart of the federal government. And D.C. going directly against federal law, I think that is such a clear and blatant sign that says that people are unhappy with these federal laws that get in people's way, that increase crime, that waste money. And what they want to do is get rid of those laws, and they want to cut crime, they want to cut taxes, they want to save money, they want to have a stronger economy. That's what people want.
It's interesting that you mention Obama and his effective betrayal on this issue. Can you speak more to that?
Yes. I'm one of the, and I've been registered libertarian for a long time, and I was one of the people that foolishly bought into Obama's 2008 campaign. It wasn't one of my smarter political decisions. And what really inspired me to vote for him in the first place was that here's a person that talked openly and frankly about his own experience with marijuana. And, you know, me being gullible thought that that meant he was going to actually take serious action to end marijuana criminalization, to end prohibition, to end the war on drugs, to cut taxes, all that kind of stuff. But the results were the exact opposite. He increased the war on drugs. He had more raids. There have been more raids on state-licensed medical marijuana dispensary under Obama than under Bush, even on a, you know, per time scale. So there's really just no question to me that Obama and the Democratic Party have really just betrayed those who feel strongly about ending the war on drugs.
You know, it'll be nice the day that we release these poor people in prison who have harmed no one else, the people who are there for drug offenses, and boy, to hear what they have to say. It's really tragic to think of their lives behind bars.
Absolutely. I mean, those are the often, you know, really just unsung, really just like the victims of this war on drugs. I mean, some people have had their lives just completely destroyed for committing no violence on anybody else, for hurting nobody else, for just engaging in a personal recreational decision. And to me, that kind of tragedy is just an unspeakable thing that has been done by this war on drugs. I think that the correct thing for us to do is that to pass legislation that's going to not only end any new arrests, but those who are in prison right now for committing no crime other than using some kind of a drug, that they should be released immediately.
And how wonderful will it be not only for the people who are suffering the most? Well, the ones suffering the most are the ones who actually get killed. And this is no joke. You know, the people killed innocents killed in gang warfare. And you could say some young 12, 14-year-old is often innocent too, that he got caught up in a gang when he was too young to know better. But not to mention the people who were getting harassed on a regular basis just for walking down the street, carrying a duffel bag, driving while black. This America is supposed to be the land of the free, and it for these folks it has not been. It's been a real black mark on the history of the United States.
Absolutely. The war on drugs has become this perfect excuse to hassle and harass any individual or any community that any police organization sees fit to harass. And it's something that really just goes across all different demographics. I mean, one of the most striking raids didn't even happen in, you know, a poor area or in a minority area. One of the most striking raids happened at a raw food co-op, and this wasn't about drugs. But some of these raids that have been done, whether it's about it, have basically vilified personal decisions. And we see these raids on co-ops in California. We see them on medical marijuana dispensaries in California. And, you know, that kind of stuff to me is insane. When you look at the destruction of property and value that could be completely ended by ending the war on drugs. You look at these SWAT team raids where people are terrorized at 3 a.m. for having a minor amount of marijuana or just having no marijuana at all. Again, could be ended by ending the war on drugs. And there's so many negatives that we could get rid of. And there's so many positives that we could add. Building responsibility, improving people's health, reducing taxes in ways that will actually build the real private sector economy. And all of that can happen from ending the war on drugs. And absolutely one of the things that can be ended is this just hateful persecution of minority groups that has been enabled by this war on drugs.
Absolutely. For instance, the stop and frisk policy in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the way these politicians grandstand about how they're reducing crime, but ignoring the root cause of crime, which is prohibitions. Prohibitions cause crime. And they're pretending that their sort of Band-Aid treatment that, you know, grossly violates the rights of the residents and particularly the minorities in New York City is successful and an excuse for this kind of behavior. But in fact, all we need to do is the right thing, which is and get to the root cause and the war on drugs.
Absolutely. And again, that will, I mean, one of the interesting statistics that I heard is that the Patriot Act has been used 100 times as often for things related to drugs and prostitution as it has been for anything even remotely related to terrorism. So it's not that we can just end these really blatant and violent incursions on our lives, but we can actually dramatically reduce these spy-type, you know, warrantless wire-type typing abuses on our privacy. Again, it really comes down to ending the war on drugs, getting the government out of our lives, and allowing individuals to make the decisions and to build the responsibility that really qualifies as real, independent adulthood.
You've just given me an idea that maybe this would also give some juice to the movement, which has been gaining a lot of momentum lately, to restore our Fourth Amendment rights. Here in D.C., we're spending, nationwide, the federal government, but particularly in D.C., they're spending $75 billion a year for their spy apparatus. There are multiple bureaucracies, huge office buildings that they're putting up, including the NSA around the D.C. area. They're also building them in other states. And that's interesting that you say a lot of this spying and, you know, other violations of our Fourth Amendment rights under the Patriot Act are not being used for terrorists, but are using for people who've harmed no one else who are so-called drug offenders.
Absolutely. There's a tremendous pressure on these, you know, just humongous incursions on human rights and privacy. There's a lot of pressure on them to deliver something. And when they can't, you know, find something legitimate, they just try to find anything minor. And the violations of our Fourth Amendment rights and of our personal privacy that's being used for essentially these completely trivial non-crimes, it's just ghastly. And I think that that one of the first steps that we really need to make is just to end the war on drugs and to just take that away, just not even have the option of warrantless wiretapping for victimless crimes. And that, to me, is the warrantless wiretapping is a complete violation of the Constitution. The existence of victimless crime is a complete violation of sense. Ending one, to me, will lead to a reduction, eventually an ending of the other.
Well, so you, Arvin Vohra, running for Congress in the 4th District in Maryland, will end the war on drugs, will release these prisoners who have committed no violence against another human being, and cut taxes accordingly. That's your plan if elected, correct?
That is my plan if elected, and as a pledge, I will absolutely sponsor legislation to that effect within my first term, and realistically, I'm going to sponsor legislation that effect as soon as I possibly can. So it's not like I'm going to be waiting until the end of the first term. If I can get it out there in the first day, it's going to be on the first day. You know, just as soon as I possibly can, that legislation is going to be on the floor. That legislation is going to be discussed, and I'll be using every bit of media, traditional media, social media, to get the word out there, get the people behind this who really want it to happen, which is basically all the or the vast majority of the individuals in America, especially once they understand the full implications and the full benefits of ending the war on drugs, which is the building of real personal responsibility, improving health, improving safety, reducing crime, and cutting taxes.
All right. Thank you, Arvin Vohra, for joining us today.
Thank you, Carla, for having me on.
Arvin Vohra is a Libertarian candidate for U.S. House in Maryland's 4th District. He's running to end the war on drugs and also to end the federal income tax and other bold measures to downsize big government. His website is votevohra.com. Please check out the Libertarian Party website at lp.org. Please consider joining the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. Help us end the failed war on drugs. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Carla Howell. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. This week's show is about ending the failed war on drugs. For the second half of our show, we'll bring on Tressa McElhaney, Libertarian for Governor in Kansas. Tressa McElhaney is an advocate for legalizing medical cannabis and hemp production. She formed and now leads the Libertarian Party affiliate in Wyandotte County in Kansas. She is now running for governor in Kansas and is competing for her state's nomination against Libertarian Keen Umber, who was on our show last week. Her website is voteforkansas.com. That's vote, the number 4, Kansas.com. Tressa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, what has inspired you to run for governor in the state of Kansas?
I tell people that this is my volunteer work gone way, way out of control. I started giving time as a volunteer 4 or 5 years ago, and it led me to the Libertarian Party 2 years ago. And this year is the year that we're trying to get people elected in our state to try and reverse the tide of politics in our state. A lot of people are not happy with what's going on in Kansas, and the way I feel like I can give best is to run for governor, because if I were to win, you have to run so that if you win, I think it would fit in my lifestyle the best. I have 4 young children, and it would allow more job flexibility, being all the way at the top. And also, I feel like Kansas is ready for another female leader. I think that Kansans really appreciate the maternal, motherly influence in politics when we've gone too far to the other direction. There is another woman running for governor in Kansas, and that'll be an interesting conversation we'll end up having. But I want to be able to affect law and policy changes that I think are part of a bigger social change that's trying to happen. I'm interested in saving the world so that I can let my babies out into it someday, because I feel like there's a lot of things that need to be fixed that we can't wait decades for. We can't wait for traditional politics to take care of the problems. I feel like politics is corrupt, and the people have to stand up. Everyday citizens who are not professional politicians have to stand up and represent the people, and we have to return to traditional politics in our state and nation.
Well, it is most refreshing to talk to someone like you. You know, we've had plenty of polished politicians, incumbent career politicians, an ordinary citizen, a mom, speaking from your heart. And thank you for doing that.
Now, thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm so honored to have the support. And I was a little fearful to start going out and telling people, yes, I'm running for governor. No, I don't really have any professional political experience, but I think that that's what makes me the best candidate. Let me tell you why. And people are really receptive to new ideas and a fresh voice, and I'm getting a lot of positive support, I got to tell you.
Okay. I don't doubt that for a second. Now, tell me something about the situation in your state with regard to the war on drugs and or the war on marijuana.
We are working, the Libertarian Party in my state has been an advocate for legalizing cannabis for medicine and even recreational use so that we don't have to spend money on and fighting the war on drugs. And hemp, agriculture or industrial hemp, sorry, in our state would be huge for us. We have always suffered from drought, low water conditions in the western part of our state. 2012 was really, really bad in our state. Some of the only things that were left growing were cannabis, hemp, we call it ditch weed here. It's the stuff that's left over that our great-grandfathers grew. And that's been a powerful thing for our farmers to recognize that even when all the other crops fail, we have a chance with hemp. As we move forward and we're not sure what's changing in our world, some people are really, I'm one of the people that believes that we have to make some serious adjustments to the way we run our country in terms of energy use and energy sources. We feel like in Kansas, we can contribute. If we're allowed to grow hemp, we have the ability to make biodiesel and other products that are made from hemp that biodegrade faster, that are even stronger than traditional products that, industrial products anyway, I guess. So we feel like it's an economic issue. It's a societal issue in our state. There's everything wrapped up into this, and we feel like hemp can really help, and cannabis can cure a lot of our problems. It's a package deal.
You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about the drought situation in Kansas and all the economic and industrial, the economic opportunity and the industrial uses of hemp. My perception 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago was that when people talked about hemp, it was one of those sort of way out there, mysterious flower child kind of phenomenon. You know, no one had a reality on the actual uses of hemp. I think we were all very, very ignorant of how important a product this is, how much of a history it is, and throughout the world, the product's been used before it was prohibited. Tell us more about how people use hemp for industrial commercial purposes.
In Kansas, we want to be able to grow it to use the seeds for biodiesel. And then my understanding is once you press the oil out of the seeds, the seed remnant is still good for animal feed. We can use the leaves for animal bedding. We can use the leaves for food. I guess I read stuff about medicinal and diet applications of cannabis. And they're talking about juicing cannabis leaves is as good as any cancer-fighting drug. I think we should be able to just try it before, you know, if we want to run it through the medical system. The stalk from the hemp plant is what you use for the fibers, for the cloth, for they grind it down into pulp, and then they make plastic out of it, and they make, actually, I think that they make the plastic out of the biodiesel, the oil. Sorry, I'm mistaken. But they make, out of the stalk, we do fibers and, the word is not on the tip of my tongue, but they crush it up and make a pulp, and then they can use that for a base for things like hempcrete. And hempcrete is concrete made out of hemp, which is superior to concrete. I think it lasts longer, and it's sturdier. It's less harmful to the environment in the process of making it. We're excited about just those things. If we get just those things in Kansas, it will be huge for us. And hemp can clear our soil. We have a lot of the fields planted with the genetically modified soybeans and corn in our state, and those crops have failed a lot in the last handful of years, maybe longer, depends on how you want to go back and talk about the records. But we think that it can heal our land and start rebuilding our land. As hemp grows, it cleans the soil and nourishes the soil, revitalizes the soil. In Kansas, the soil and the land is absolutely our number one resource, and we have to take care of that. People are really connecting with the power and the possibilities of hemp in our state. And like I said, it's food, it's medicine, it's concrete, it's biodiesel, it's paper. I want to be able to buy hemp paper towels and Kleenex and be able to quit using paper napkins, or be able to start using paper napkins again. I'm using cloth napkins trying to save the world, and they just get so gross and grimy. It'd be really great if I could buy hemp napkins at the store, throw them in my compost pile. I think that, you know, little things like this can make huge impact in our world.
It's so interesting that, you know, we've been just so ignorant of what can be done with this product. Now, if you are elected governor in Kansas, what specifically will you do to change this?
Well, as governor, I'm looking at, you know, what can you do as governor? What's the powers? What can I actually do? There's, I would like to, we talk about in the first 100 days, I could go in and I could release all nonviolent offenders. I could pardon them from prison. We save $35,000 per person per year in incarceration costs. And that's kind of an impractical start, because you release all those people without any kind of job or economic or any kind of support to protect their families. What are they likely going to do? Go back into the same black market activity that got them into jail in the first place. So it's part of a combination plan. We really need our legislature to embrace the bills and pass the bills. And as governor, I would absolutely sign legalization bills. I'd like our state to really be careful when they write the legislation, when they pass it, not to make it too, we call it boxy. We need to have freedom in the law, and we need to make sure that we don't restrict even the ability to grow it in your own yard. We need to be really careful not to restrict the hemp and the cannabis too much. We need to have absolutely some safety measures for the medicinal cannabis. The stuff that we're growing now is very potent and could make somebody sick, absolutely. But so we need to have some controls there. But we need to be careful that we're not over-legislating it, because then we have to enforce all those laws. I think that 50 and 100 years from now, we're going to look back on this end of prohibition era that we're currently in. And what are we going to say when we look back on that? Are we going to, what kind of decisions were going to be the right ones and what were going to be the wrong ones? And we need to be careful to make sure that we make the right decisions right now.
Now, if you have a line item veto in Kansas, I don't know if you do, many states the governor does, you would have the power to nix any pieces of the legislation that try to prevent, for instance, individuals from growing hemp on their own property.
Right. Yeah. And I don't pretend to be as much of a law scholar as I should be. I understand the process of the line item veto. My understanding is in Kansas it goes back to the legislature for another pass. So I would be really hesitant to mess with the hemp bill. I think that what we've got going in Kansas, I think, is a good starting place. We have a medical cannabis bill right now that's being blocked in committee. We're working on that. And then the hemp bill, we have one ready to go. We need it to be introduced. And there's huge support from the farmers in our state for that. We have a lot of social agenda stuff going through our Congress right now, our state Congress. And it's really disheartening to know that they're trying to legislate all kinds of moral issues when they could pass a simple bill that would enable our farmers to grow hemp. It would piggyback off of the measure passed in the farm bill at the federal level that is going to allow states that have legalized it to grow it without any interference from the federal government. That would be huge for us.
Okay. We're going to take a break in a second here. We're talking with Tressa McElhaney, the Libertarian candidate for governor in Kansas. She aims to end the war on drugs and the war on marijuana in her state. Her website is voteforkansas.com. That's the number 4, voteforkansas.com. Be sure to visit lp.org, learn more about the Libertarian Party. Join us. You can get active, meet great libertarians, get involved. Help us end the failed war on drugs. Help us end the failed war on marijuana. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Very rarely does our news media spotlight some of the good things that are happening in our world. For more of these good stories and the people that are creating them, tune in to Bread for the Journey with Mariana Cacciatore. Whether these good acts stem from personal tragedy or just a desire to help out and make this a better world in which to live, you'll find inspiration in every week's program. Connect with those that are doing something great for a change. Listen for Bread for the Journey, Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking with Tressa McElhaney, the Libertarian candidate for governor in Kansas. Her website is voteforkansas.com. So, Tressa, tell us what you know about your Democratic and Republican opponents. Who do you expect they will be, and where do you think they will stand on the issue of marijuana and the war on drugs?
Well, let me start with, surprise, surprise, the Republican Party in Kansas. Jennifer Wynn is a mom whose son has gotten wrapped up in a mess because of the drug war policy, and she is fired up, and she is challenging our current governor, Sam Brownback, in the primary. So the Republican Party in our state, the majority party in our state, is going to get to have a conversation about marijuana, and it is a wonderful thing for the movement. They have their primary is in August, so we'll see what happens through then. I have personally put literature in Governor Brownback's hands about hemp, and I know that our medicinal cannabis people have put literature in his hands. So he's aware of the need for legislation to legalize in our state, and he has not made a single public comment to that subject. We recently had our silver-haired legislature. They represent 500,000 Kansans and of retirement age or older, and it's a volunteer group. They heard testimony from Jack Cole of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and after listening to him for 30 minutes about why the war on drugs has failed and why we should end it, they voted by a 70% majority to legalize cannabis in Kansas. So the support is definitely there, and I would hope that our governor would be on board if we should pass legislation before his term ends. On the Democratic side, is Paul Davis is the likely nominee. There has not been another Democratic challenger. And my opinion of Paul Davis is that it's sad that they're asking him to run for governor. He has a really great position in the Senate. He's won it by default moderate in our state because we have such a pull to the far, far right. I think it's going to be a big loss for the party. I think he's a good, smart, motivated guy. I think he doesn't want to be running for governor. He does not strike me as having a lot of passion about it. And maybe that's just the bleeding heart liberal that I don't see that he really has the fire to fix all the things in Kansas need fixed. He's concentrating on education policy, and I don't feel like he has a lot of ideas. It's just, these are the problems. These are the problems. This is what Governor Brownback did. I don't feel like he's coming out with real strong ideas and policy direction. I feel like I'm a better candidate. I got to tell you, I know I'm biased.
Well, you're allowed to be. You're running for a purpose, and your purpose is freedom and less government. And in this case, we're talking about the war on drugs and the war on marijuana, and that's why people should be running for office, to change policy and move it in the direction they believe is right. It's an interesting situation you describe with the Republican primary. This is great. This means there's going to be a lot of pressure on Brownback in the primary and then again in the general. And is there also pressure coming from the fact that your neighboring state is Colorado, where they just legalized recreational marijuana?
Oh, absolutely. We are wondering, everybody is talking about, how much is it going to cost us to enforce this border war now? We actually had someone, a middle-aged lady in arguably normal health, came back across the border and was arrested for possession of small amount of marijuana and died in jail. There was no other reason for her to be in jail. She had not broken any laws. She was not speeding. She didn't commit any kind of violent crime. So already there is a casualty, like a physical death casualty from this war on drugs in a real recent way. Our corrections department is lobbying for more money. They want to build a brand new prison in Kansas because we're overflowing at the seams, they say. To that we say, if we could change our laws, we would empty out 70% of our prison population and just keep the violent criminals in there. And actually, we think that there's less than even 30% of our current population is violent criminals. Something like 20% is people that are mentally ill that don't have any place else to go because our governor came in and cut mental health services money. I think that with the legalization of hemp and marijuana or cannabis, that we are going to have more tax revenue because, you know, the mainstream is going to want to tax it, be that as it will. But we're going to have more money to restore things that are important. I feel like there are some things the government should do, and until society steps in and there's not-for-profits taking care of it, we have to get mental health under control because these are the people that are going out and abusing the right to carry arms. They're the ones that are going in and shooting people that shouldn't, you know. This is a big problem to the side that we can fix with the hemp and cannabis legalization.
Now, it's interesting. You're the mother of four small children, as you mentioned, and yet you apparently believe they're going to be safer and better off with the war on drugs ended. Why is that, speaking from a parental point of view?
Well, yeah, I can't remember how to say his name. Arvin?
Arvin Vorot was our congressional candidate on in the first half hour.
Yes, he was talking about how drug dealers don't check your ID. And I remember being in high school, and it was much easier for us to get the illegal drugs than it was to get cigarettes or alcohol because they check ID. I think, you know, everybody says if we legalize it, if we regulate it, it's still going to be on the black market. Yes, but not to such an extent. And it's going to be much better controlled. It's going to be safer. It's going to be more not only regulated, but it'll be a more consistent product. So you won't have any kind of intermixing. You know, the drug dealer, sometimes some of them are straight guys, and some of them are the ones that add something else to get you hooked on something else. And I think that the safer way to do it is to have just regulations in place so that you know what kind of product you're getting. And stupid things are happening to our kids. They get caught with a bag of marijuana, and they have a felony on their record, which prevents them from getting federal aid for school and have implications, lifelong implications that just wreck your life. I think that it's a law that needs to go. Period.
Right. Now, we have just a few minutes here. Tell me if you agree with what Arvin Vorot, the Libertarian for Congress in Maryland, who was on the show in the first half hour, he said that he thinks there will be more personal responsibility around the use of drugs when we end the war on drugs. Do you agree with that and why? In just a minute, we need to wrap up. If you could tell us.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Personal responsibility. we feel like the best medical decisions are the ones between you and your doctor. You have to take care of yourself. If you feel like if you have personal disability, having access to any kind of treatment, including cannabis medicines, is going to be crucial. I think it's going to heal a lot of bodies and allow people to get up and off of disability and become productive in society again. At that level, just being able to take care of yourself and having more options, that's what it is for me. If my babies get sick, we're out of here. We're going to Colorado. If something, cannabis medicine can heal them, where pharmaceuticals will just ravage their body. For me, it's mostly about the possibility for medicine and diet and, you know, the economy.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Tressa McElhaney, the Libertarian candidate for governor in Kansas. You've said made a lot of wonderful points and enlightened us here. Thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Visit Tressa McElhaney's website at voteforkansas.com. That's vote, the number 4kansas.com. The Libertarian Party and its candidates are working to reduce the size, scope, authority, taxation, and spending of big government so that you are safer, more free, and less taxed, so the world is at peace, and so that you and every American enjoys the greatest opportunity and prosperity possible. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. Please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. Help us end the war on drugs, cut your taxes, and make government small. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Carla Howell, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Carla Howell again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.